Welcome to the AI experience from basics to breakthroughs. I'm Sirte Pihlaja, your host, the CEO at Shirute and the CXP Finland head of team. In this series, we explore how artificial intelligence is reshaping customer and employee experiences, addressing the innovations, ethical questions, and strategies essential for navigating the world of artificial intelligence. Join us for this episode, and don't forget to subscribe to follow us on your favorite platform. Welcome back to the AI experience from basics to breakthroughs. I'm your host, Sirte Pihlaja, and today we're discussing with my guest a topic that's reshaping the very fabric of business as we know it. We're moving beyond AI just as a tool into a world where AI agents operate independently, collaborate in swarms, and even act as customers. But what does it truly mean to build an AI-native organization? How do you design for a future where algorithms make decisions, negotiate deals, and influence outcomes? To explore these game-changing questions, I'm joined by Mikko Alasaarela, an impact-driven AI entrepreneur at Agion, coder, advisor, and the co-founder of Agentix Finland. He's at the forefront of building ethical, strategic, and scalable AI systems. And today he'll walk us through what it means to rewire business for the agentic era. Mikko is a responsibility-driven AI entrepreneur who has founded and invested in tech companies that have raised over $30 million and employed more than 700 people across Finland, Germany, and the US. He's lived and worked in global innovation hubs like London, San Francisco, and Berlin, holds multiple international patents, and has won the Red Dot Design Award and the Global Blockchain Competition in Artificial Intelligence. A widely followed thought leader on algorithmic influence, Mikko's writing has reached tens of millions worldwide, and he's known for making complex tech both understandable and thought-provoking, as you're about to hear and witness. We'll cover how machine customers are changing markets, why bots could soon make up 90% of internet traffic, and what Europe must do to stay competitive and sovereign in the age of AI. This conversation will shift how you think about data, decision-making, and the future of your organization. So get ready, because this is not just about adapting to AI. It's about reimagining how your business thinks, acts, and grows. If you're passionate about customer experience and ready to take your knowledge to the next level, join us at the CX Masterclass happening this November 24th to 26th. You can get your tickets at cxmasterclass.fi. We'd love to see you there. So welcome, Mikko. It's so good to have you to this podcast today.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for inviting.
Let's dive right into the deep end. What does it really mean to become an AI native organization? That's something that you have been talking a lot about lately. How is that different from simply adopting AI tools or models?
So AI native starts from the fact that we have been developing a technology that might be the ultimate final innovation of the humanity. Like, we are building intelligence that is better than us. And when we are reaching towards this parity of intelligence between the AI and the humans, which we are basically rapidly doing, we come into a place where we have to rethink how we organize ourselves, like how we organize the societies, how we organize our companies, how we organize our public sector organizations. All of them have been built so far based on the idea that we have human organizations where we have leadership and we have employees, you know, and we have different roles and responsibilities that are managed and organized by humans. In the new world, we are in a place where very large portions of this operation and these activities can be replaced with artificial intelligence and also like AI agents. AI agents being like these entities that have roles or responsibilities as artificially intelligent actors in the system. And in this environment, like, you cannot think of AI as an extension of human work. Extension meaning that the human is using AI to do something. You have to think AI as an actor and, you know, an AI as a performer of a task. And once you do that, you are able to literally multiply the productivity of your organization. And it's coming from the simple fact that it's almost like hiring a 3 times larger organization without hiring people. And this is something that a lot of the organizations today do not understand well. They don't understand that the real like productivity jump that you can get from AI is when humans are not doing anything. Like, you do not need the human to do something for the productivity to jump. And if you think that there's always a human that does something with AI, you are limiting the role of AI as a tool. And that's limiting the potential of AI to bring out the productivity that you can. And because this transformation is so large, we cannot even we cannot afford not to go into the AI native organization if we want to compete.
Imagine that means a lot of changes also to the team dynamics and all of that when we have digital people working in these teams as AI agents become part of these new future teams. If we still speak a little bit about the human element in these teams, what would you say are the new roles and skills that CX and business leaders should start building now in their teams? I mean, do we need agent designers, orchestration architects, AI ethicists? What are the roles that become commonplace in these teams?
Yeah, so what is currently quite widely expected is that the human roles are changing quite significantly from today's roles as a result of this AI native transformation. The current expectation on the market is that 90% of the workforce has to be reskilled. And 90% of the workforce means practically everybody. And this is not a small task for us to go through. So the human roles will probably shift rapidly towards different directions, but one of the key themes that I see in human roles is that humans are moving to positions where speed is not of an essence. A lot of the things that we used to do with human timescales are now moving to the AI timescales. And the AI timescales is that something that may take 2 weeks from a human can take 2 seconds from AI. And this is not something that we should even be part of anymore. If you can do something in 2 seconds with AI, probably we should not try to use humans to that job. And that basically in itself will show that anything that can be bottlenecked by human timeframes probably should not be done by humans. And then that moves us to like in the roles where this kind of longer horizons, let's say building trust over long periods of time or building strategic insights strategic plans for a long-term operation. Even the observation and monitoring of agents is something that we probably cannot do because our cognition is not fast enough to understand what's happening when hundreds of agents are performing tasks. So when we cannot do supervision, the thing we can do is to set the rules, build the strategies, and act on those tasks where the human touch and the human presence is important. I mean, this includes, of course, being the conversation partner to the customers, being in places where the human interaction is very important, and also on tasks that do not require fast speeds.
We have been discussing with some colleagues that in the CX world, we are pushing, at least in Finland, we're pushing people a lot towards these self-service, so online services and such. And then with agents and artificial intelligence coming into the picture, it probably means that people will more and more long for the human touch. So in some forms it might become, or some companies it might become a premium, like subscription, that you get to actually, you know, interact with a human person within that organization. What's your take on that?
That is definitely the trend today. We do have also already, like in terms of customer service, we have come to a place where the human timeframes are not anymore acceptable service quality. We are so used to getting everything done instantly that the only place where that can be achieved is to implement bots to do that service. I have realized that myself, like I'm when I'm thinking that I kind of want to talk to a human, but I also understand that that means that I would have to spend more time on it. And then I'm basically comparing the convenience of getting things done instantly to the fact that I can talk to a human. I may still prefer to take the things done in instantly if that human interaction is not in my priority for the day. So if I'm an elderly woman who is alone and in her home, like and wanting to like have at least some human interaction during the day, I may want to talk to a customer service representative simply to have a human connection. But a busy business person, like who just wants to get things done quickly and do not want to deal with too many complications, I would say that the AI-based service is probably the winning option. These are like the interesting part is that a lot of the most valuable companies in the world mostly face us with AI, like already today. Like you don't interact with Meta human representatives, you don't interact with Google human representatives, you don't. Maybe you do a little bit more with Microsoft because they're doing more B2B and you know there's more human service providers because of the bigger deals, but at the end of the day, like it looks like the ones that have been employing AI the most are the most fast-growing companies as well. So yeah, it's an interesting world. We don't even know like whether we are going to be interacting with other people like in the future of business, and that's that would technically mean that if we actually do not require that human interaction, that you could build organizations that are completely AI-based with no humans at all. And that's a completely new world to be entering in.
That's for sure. Talking about deployment, you've talked about companies getting stuck in this so-called prototype purgatory. What needs to change for organizations to successfully scale their AI systems beyond all of these pilots and really start taking them into production use?
Yeah, this is something that I'm tackling with my company. So we realized very quickly that the human oversight for AI agents is not possible. It's technically not scalable way of looking at things. So if you think of an AI agent as a target of supervision, that means that each AI agent in itself is a target of supervision, but also the interactions between agents is target of supervision. And because agents can interact with each other, you are literally increasing the amount of supervision requirements exponentially when you are adding agents to the system. This exponential growth of cognitive load makes it completely impossible to scale cognitively, even in the long horizon tasks. But it's also impossible because AI agents can perform the tasks in seconds. There's no way that you can do human oversight on things like this. So the only way to really like roll out large swats or like swarms of agents, these large swarms of agents will require governance as code. And you know, and you have to use their own methods, like as the technical methods to communicate with agents in internet speed or at the AI speed. And this is something that has been leaving a lot of the projects to this prototype purgatory, because even though like you can test and prove that the agent works quite well, there's no way to govern it in the organization. And when there's no way of like who takes responsibility of this agent, If that question is not answered, there's nothing that makes it production ready. And I think this kind of like governance layer that we have to build on the organization will enable the proliferation of agents in any organization. And now it becomes, from the organizational perspective, the competitive edges that these organizations are building will be based on the amount of understanding and insight they can generate from the data that they process, as well as how well they have been setting out their own missions, like for the agents. Because if they are building like unique competitive advantage with the agentic processes combined with unique data, I think that's the winning combination today. And
we had
it's
wait, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. So from today's like human organizations, where we basically are saying that by hiring the best talent, you can win. That was based on the idea that the best talent has the best insights, you know, and the best insights lead into winning performance on the organization. On the internet speed, you have to start thinking, how do you build the data edge for your organization? Because the data is kind of like the fuel for the intelligence that you can emerge from the data. And this is also something that I call the transition from application-centric architectures to data-centric architectures. Because in today's world, we are still running a lot of the organizations with traditional like enterprise software and SaaS applications, where the application provider has decided the structure of the data based on the interfaces of the product or some other reasons. So you have like pre-built databases for different purposes by vendors of software that have been basically dictating how your organization should work, you know, in terms of data organization. That will change. And we already see like this kind of cutting edge of this transition in Klarna in Sweden, like when they are trying to basically turn from an application-centric organization into a data-centric organization. And people are closely watching how this transition is ongoing and how successful it will be. But if, like I said, once this transformation from application-centric operations to data-centric operations is complete, the imperative for every company will be to build some unique insight and intelligence within like the digital infrastructure of the company. So you cannot rely anymore on having the best talent. You have to somehow get the information into the use of AI as well.
Coming back to the AI governance question that you mentioned there, we had an earlier episode where we had Ilja Ikonen from Verkkokauppa.com, who was talking about how they are actually, how the IT department is actually today's HR, because they are recruiting these AI systems. So I thought that was a really great idea that they had put into place, that they sort of have these workshops in the same sense that if you were to recruit a new hiree, like a human employee, in the same sense you for AI agents, or they were talking about AI tools and systems in general, that every time you need to have this sort of a recruitment process for them as well. So and I know Jensen Huang from Huawei has been talking about this same thing later on after Ilja mentioned this. I think that also another point that needs to be made here is that AI governance is like a cyclic thing, that whenever you do a new change to your AI system, you should always do the same kind of iterative analysis kind of to the system, that have you done something that talking about EU regulation here, that have you now made changes that might actually, you know, be in a different risk, put your system, AI system, into a different risk category.
Yeah.
So do you see companies actually doing this on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, so like this is also something that we are building, like the capability of implementing all of those governance rules and compliance rules directly within the system of running agents. And the important understanding that you get from when you go into these regulatory requirements, the regulatory requirements actually are not targeted to agents directly. the regulatory requirements actually are only focusing on the intent that you have for using data, and then what kind of data you have. And the intent and data can be separated from the agents completely, because when you build governance models for the agents, you can set missions for the agents and build the intent there. And you know, when you build the intent for the agents outside the agents, and then you build the data source classification on the other side, you can build a governance model that you can audit separately. And once the governance model is audited for the purpose, you can put as many agents as you want on top of that model, and it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, you don't have to audit those agents separately. And this is something that will accelerate the companies a lot, because you can be sure that all the new agents that you drop into the operation will be conforming to those compliance and governance rules. And this is something that a lot of the organizations in the public sector are specifically looking towards, because right now they have to do this data protection impact assessment and all the other things per agent, which is absolutely ridiculous. Like, I mean, there's no way that this is going to scale with the current ways.
For sure. You set also an ambitious target there, saying that deploying AI agent armies, and you're doing this in months, when we were discussing this earlier on.
Yeah.
What are the most significant technical or cultural or organizational risks that you see on the way there?
Yeah, building agents is becoming completely trivial. I think next spring, companies can create agents simply by prompting. To say that, hey, create me an agent that does this and that, and it will appear, and you know, it will be probably good. So creating agents is not the bottleneck here. The bottleneck here is like, how do you set up the governance structures to be able to deploy agents rapidly? And this is something that every organization has to figure out. And I think once you have those things in place, I don't see any limitations on how fast you can go. Like, you can go as fast as you want. And I think one of the important ways of measuring agents is to measure the trust of the agents, because the trust, when measured properly, enables you to give an appropriate amount of autonomy to each agent based on the trust that you have on them. And this is also an important way to guarantee that the agent is doing what it's supposed to do, because you may have two different ways that you measure the agent's performance. One is that how much does it help to achieve our goals as an organization? And secondly, how well does it stay within the guardrails that we set to that agent? Yeah. So and when those are measured against like a joint trust score mechanism, you actually are in a place where you can automatically, and this is also interesting, like governance as a code means that the code is coordinating intelligence. You can create these rules where you say that automatically grant this agent more autonomy based on the good behavior that this display. And this autonomy enables it to access, let's say, new MCP servers. Like, MCP server in this game means that you give access to trusted agents to more resources within the organization. And this way, you don't have to think when you deploy the agents that how much harm will this agent cause in my organization. You just think that if it gains our trust, it can do things. You know, if it doesn't, then we just basically discard the agent and realize that it wasn't a good one. And this way, like, the broad deployment ends up in a place where you accelerate those agents that are good, and you deprecate the agents that are not good. And you don't have, as I said, like, you don't have to worry too much about like the performance of the agents in advance. And you don't even have to know like where in the organization the agents can do the most good, because you can just simply test everything and see like what sticks.
That sounds so amazing. What would you say that a transformation would look like when you move toward becoming AI native organization? How do you break down the risk, the iteration and scaling parts?
Yeah, so many organizations want to start this transformation from one unit. Oftentimes it could be like something in the customer service or sales or customer facing functions, because oftentimes like the companies see the most return on investment fastest from those places. Many like manufacturing businesses that have factories or like some industrial processes in place, they have optimized those processes quite well. So you kind of have, I mean, the methods how the factory works, or like the line is producing stuff, is probably quite efficient. Now the main question for the company is like, how do you multiply the productivity of this company? It's not about making that line more efficient; it's making better business with it, and you know, and having this better business means in this case that you have to figure out like what your competitive strengths are, and you know, and how you do business with clients. How do you utilize insights that you gain from the market to create an edge? And you know, and how do you create like this winning customer experience around the whole thing, where like the whole process will basically increase the customer retention and also the value that the customers get from this business. So yeah, we are coming back to the CX processes definitely in this case, because that's kind of like an easy way of multiplying your company's value. The ways that how you create produce things, that's kind of like a solved problem for lots of the industries. How do you create value? That's a completely different story.
I think most of the times when we have spoken together, you said that you have been coding these AI agents forms in the background with AI. So you let the AI code the agents. Could you maybe describe for our listeners what the swarm of agents might look like in a real business setting? I mean, what do these agents systems do today? You mentioned already that they can sort of follow up on each other's tasks and score them on a trust basis. But could you maybe walk us briefly through how you design an agent swarm? What roles do these agents play? How they learn? Whether you've seen any emergent behaviors there yet?
Yeah. So currently, this is pretty much a operational modus operandi and the software development side. So I'm not going to go there. Like that's something that lots of people already know how to do. So I personally have like these agent forms running on Claude Code that are implementing code like when I'm doing other tasks, and you know, and I give those swarms of agents like tasks, and then I'm basically reviewing their work and you know, and seeing like how well they did, and give them new tasks. The task horizon on those kind of tasks depends a lot on the memory, and you know, and the memory is one of the big bottlenecks currently for long-term and long-running tasks within AI. Because if you have a long context for the agents available, you can run much, much longer tasks with the agents without like having to start new like processes. Now when we go into let's go into the customer experience side. Let's take an example of customer service with AI. How will it look like? So basically, you could potentially put your company's customer-facing operation on WhatsApp. Let's say that you put it on WhatsApp. I mean, you could technically put it on your website, but in today's world, like, who goes to anybody's website anymore? Like, I mean, it's not like happening that often that it used to happen. Okay, you can still put the same entry point for this customer experience also on the website. Like, you can have a chat box in there. Now you have in this this chat, like if you did it on WhatsApp, on the WhatsApp side, you actually know the identity of the customer because you have the phone number. You can tie this customer into your existing records of the customer. So now you don't have that on the website. You have to ask that, who are you, like who is coming to our website, because you don't have that identity. But in WhatsApp, you actually have the identity of the customer known. So now you know who that person is, and that person is now talking to your company's like customer service bot. Now the customer service bot is actually not a one bot. It's an orchestrator agent that has access to a lot of resources within the organization through other agents. Like you can have an agent on the background that takes care of like customer delivery processes. You can have an agent that does like a customer, let's say, okay. So there's like a, depending on the life cycle of the customer, if you identify initially that this customer is an existing customer or customer prospect, a completely different set of agents will be deployed, like on the background for the orchestrator. And now the customer asks, like, let's say the customer asks for something as a prospect, then you invoke the agents that are helping them go through the purchase process, like how do you buy from our company. If the customer is an existing customer, it can walk through either like reclamation process, or it can go through like a process of coordinating through a delivery, or like it can go through how to use the product or service, or like it can go through lots of different directions. But you don't have to, as I said, you don't have to embed all of this intelligence and all of these data sources and all of these agentic processes into one large like Frankenstein agent. You just have a coordinator that understands the intent of the customer from the conversation, and then fetches the information through those like specialized agents. So you kind of have a team of customer service representatives for all kinds of different units, coordinated by this coordinator agent through the chat. And you can give any, literally you can share every single little detail of the customer's needs with that swarm. And mm-hmm. and it's quite accurate in today's world already, because it's not that hard when you have the identity and the context of the customer already known at the time of the conversation. You can tie it up with the data sets that are relevant for this customer, and use that data for the best possible customer experience. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm.
Great example there, I think. And in the latest Agentics Finland meetup, I think there was somebody who was showing how he was actually creating these agents on the fly. So based on the task at hand, it would somehow code it in the background, and then actually, so you would just then deploy that agent for that process, but it wouldn't exist outside of that conversation, I guess. But that was a really interesting.
It's also
feature.
Yeah, it's also possible to create this like single purpose agents that are solving one problem, and then you just vanish them. I've done it myself a few times during this year already. Like, yeah, sometimes you have a problem that you want to solve, and then you are too lazy to basically try to work it yourself. You just like spawn an agent that, hey, take care of this for me, and then takes care, and then you just discard the agent. But we have like these weird new processes that are coming into our daily lives, like that are arising from the fact that we can do everything.
Yeah, but I see your eyes sparkling quite in the same sense as mine, because I get so excited about this future prospects of what we can be doing in well, not even in the like near future. It's already here. So that's something that people don't seem to understand, that it's not science fiction anymore. So
exactly.
interesting thing there. Let's move maybe on to the customer side next. That was what you were describing there, was more about the customer service processes. Yep. That are happening with these AI agents. But we are talking about machine customers. What's your definition for a machine customer? How do you see them changing the way businesses deliver value services and experiences? There's a lot going on, I think, at the moment with OpenAI coming out finally with ChatGPT-based conversational commerce, and they just announced this Walmart deal, which is like biggest US retailer going full in into agentic conversational commerce.
Yeah, so okay, so in terms of internet traffic, the bots surpassed human traffic already last July, like not this year's July, but last year's July. And that was the moment when out of the global internet traffic, over 50% was from bots. In Europe, it's over 70% already. Like, so basically, as of now, most of the traffic on the internet is bots. So it would be super ignorant to think that the traffic on your website is humans who are doing something, like going forward, because we already are at the times when there will be more bots visiting your website than humans. So now the main question is that if people's purchasing behavior will change so that they will just ask someone from their own like AI assistant that, hey, find me the best product for this or find me the best service for this. And then the agent goes out and, you know, and finds alternatives in those cases, you have to make it extremely simple to buy from you. You have to make clear that your product's descriptions and the information available for the agents fits with the intents of the humans who are asking these agents to look up for this information. So in my case, I already have experienced this. Like, I've been telling this story in many podcasts. But in June, I got this like approach from Kazakhstan, they approached me on multiple different forums, all of the emails and, you know, and messages and, you know, and so on in multiple channels. And then I finally answered on a LinkedIn message asking how can I help? And they said that they are a corporation from Kazakhstan who is looking to do AI native transformation for their organization. And they asked from ChatGPT who is the best person to help them with this. And ChatGPT said that I was the best person to help them with this. And I realized that, wow, ChatGPT is basically pitching for my skills all over the world. And, you know, and I mean, it wasn't a surprise for me in the sense that I have been going into the GEO and, you know, and all this area. So I kind of understand what is happening there. But that was kind of like a really interesting testament of how this world is evolving. So I would say that in tomorrow's world, people will not find you because they are looking at some link lists on Google. They will find you because they are having a conversation with an agent, and the agent is bringing you up on the conversation as a relevant alternative for something.
And that's a whole different discussion on GEO, generative engine optimization, and AIO, artificial intelligence optimization, that you need to, you used to have to create your websites and services like mobile first. Now it's AI first. You have to become accessible to these AI agents, AI search mechanisms, and so on. But if you want to know more about that, we had a good discussion about that with Kieran Gilmurray in two episodes or three episodes back, and he's actually going to join us for the CX Masterclass in November. So there's a whole discussion moving forward on that with him. But really, really, that's so intriguing at the moment that every single e-commerce or anybody who's have a digital presence, they should actually take care of their current services, that they are machine readable in that sense. Have you, by the way, been tracking in any way which industries are already seeing this momentum with machine customers or AI agents? Or where do you expect the next wave of disruption to happen?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's there's trends happening on both B2B and B2C markets regarding this. I don't have enough information or capability of predicting which part, if it's B2B or B2C that will see that, because there's pros and cons on both sides. First of all, consumer behavior shifts, but it shifts this kind of over the spans of time. Even though we have a lot of users for the AI chats that are already being used for commercial intent, so people are using Perplexity and they are using ChatGPT for asking commercial questions, asking hey, tell me what is the best computer for my needs, or tell me where should I stay when I'm traveling to Barcelona, or stuff like this. So that's already happening, but that's still, in terms of large masses, Google is still having from the regular searches significant traffic. And we also have the traffic that goes through the social media channels, through the advertising there. So So how does this shift, and where does the shift happen, like in the most significant way? It's a good question. I think there will be breakthroughs over the coming years, like in different segments. But I would assume that in let's say that specifically in B2B settings, when companies are looking for edge for their own products, and they are looking for components for their products, for example, there's an interesting possibility now for a innovative companies to basically be found, in like, let's say that you have, like, previously you had like these obscure products that were completely impossible to find on Google because they're so obscure and they never get any attention. But the story is completely flipped when you have like some researchers in some labs in Germany looking for specific components for their products that wouldn't be found on Google that easily because it's so special. But if you actually optimize for the AI agents, you can actually build a narrative that goes through saying that, hey, you should solve your problem this way, and we have like a good idea for that. And then the AI picks that up and delivers that, hey, there's also a way that you can solve this problem this way, and suddenly, like, you are in a place where it's possible for you as a product designer or like a researcher to find new solutions for your problems with AI recommending you the actual approaches together with these alternative products that were completely impossible to find in the past. So I'm kind of excited about those like niche use cases because those niche use cases were kind of obscure in the past, but now they can suddenly be incredibly relevant for, and it's actually relevant for me right now because I'm doing this kind of research and I'm trying to figure out like new ways of approaching, and I'm finding and discovering new products that I never knew about before because of it. And I'm realizing the value of this kind of conversation.
Interesting. Coming back to that, whether it's going to be in the B2C or to the B2B sector, I think that the history has shown us that usually, it's B2C that picks up a trend, and then the masses start requiring that in the on the B2B side. But actually, there's this Estonian startup that's been around for a couple of years already, Pactum AI. I don't know if you've heard about that one, or.
I haven't used them, no.
Oh, well, it's a B2B platform really for AI agents to come together, and they make huge deals there, and negotiate totally autonomously. And I think their record was like 87 seconds worth for billions of like negotiation. And it's being used at the moment by big companies such as Maersk. I think Walmart is there as well, doing all of their like external like subcontractor deals. So if you're a small player, you need to go to Pactum to do business with these bigger companies. And I think that that's where it's going to be moving a lot towards, at least on the B2B side, that it's going to be our agents who are going to do all the deals and negotiations from now on. Well, we'll see about that. But anyhow, on the B2C side, I think it. Well, we have seen the developments on the retail side that it we had first we had Perplexity, who was trying to get everybody around this conversational commerce. Then Amazon did the same thing with both their Rufus and their Buy For Me thing. Then now finally, and Google actually came up with their own AP2 protocol in between, and the very next week it was when ChatGPT launched theirs. Solution. I think that then everybody, the media was, it was all over the media. I think there's something with OpenAI that because they are so huge in the B2C sector that they get all this visibility. So they have become the sort of Apple of today, that they just look, in the background what everybody who's more innovative is doing, and then they come up with the same plan, and suddenly it's on everybody's minds. But I think from my side, it's a good thing because I've been waiting for these machine customers to pick up for quite a few years already, been following and researching into that, and I hope that this really, hits the nail on the head there, that we really see a lot of movement moving forward from here on on agentic AI and conversational commerce and all of that?
Yeah, I think it will start. Definitely, it will start from this aggregate results on the ChatGPT and others. People are just asking for the best solutions for themselves, and then they basically get like a synthesized summary of what's out there, and then they kind of link from there to the actual product pages. That's the first step, in this journey. The next step is that you have a trusted agent that goes and fetches that for you and makes it ready. Maybe puts you directly into a checkout page and that you then still click on it, like, so you make the ultimate decision of the purchase. And then eventually it could even go one step further and you just delegate the job to an agent that you trust and is going to make the deal happen. But I think in the current focus should be on the first step, which is that you're not going to be discovered anymore from a Google link list. You're not going to be discovered by somebody asking a question from the AI, and the AI is answering, and it better include you, because if it doesn't, then you are not existing. And this is something that I think is the first step for most companies right now.
Yeah, zero clicks are becoming a very big problem for the business logic of companies. So there's definitely something that needs improvement there, that you need to work your company's visibility all over again to be visible to these AI services. Do you if you look at this from the perspective of CX professionals, what would you say would be the concrete steps that they should take now to start preparing for machine customers and AI agent-based interactions on either side of the table, really?
Yeah, so the first step, of course, is the interesting part is that you used to have like this flows that you designed for human interactions and how you guide the customer flow on the website. So the very first question is that what if that's not true anymore? How does the journey look like when it's not happening in the website? And this is a sea change for professional who has been thinking about this in the past, because everything that you knew was true is not anymore true. Do you still try to pull that customer into some kind of customer journey on your side? Of course, the better you have, the better grip you have on the customer, of course, the more value you can make from this owning the customer interface. And you kind of don't want to delegate that to ChatGPT or any other player, because if they can be the ultimate broker of customer intent, like, of course they're going to take their share of the value, because of their position. I think in today's world, the main thing you have to figure out is that how do you get access to the customers' intents, like, and conversations, like how you pull them into your realm in a proper sense. From my perspective, if you can have a direct chat conversation with your customer, it doesn't have to happen on a website, it can happen on WhatsApp or some other place. You already are in a pretty solid place in understanding the client's intent directly. You are also in full control of the customer experience you can deliver. And you have a opportunity of pretend like I said, retaining the customer through continuously delivered good experience. It completely depends on the market that you are in. Like, you may have a product that is one of sale, and there's the next thing you want to interact the cu customer with is like if they can make a repeat purchase or like some add-on purchase to the existing purchase, or if you have a ongoing subscription or like ongoing like a customer relationship, like then you have to design the flows differently. But I do think that if you have any means of having a conversation with the client and offering the customer like a good experiences whenever they want to interact with you via AI, like that's going to be the one of the big differentiators that you can deliver.
Gartner says actually anyhow that this is a huge opportunity. We're talking about a trillion or trillions dollar opportunity next year. About a fifth of all inbound customer service volume would be coming from these machine customers, and also in 2030 about 20 plus percent of the total revenue that companies make will be coming from servicing these AI agents. So it's definitely something to look into for anybody who wants to do business in the future, because who could really have a fifth of their revenue, left on the table? That doesn't really make any sense. Drawing from your earlier work on this algorithmic influence, I know you've been working in the gaming industry. What lessons guide what how we should what lessons do you think should guide what how we design AI agents today? How can we ensure that they reflect human values, or avoiding harmful incentives or bias?
Yeah, so we are coming to a phase where the intelligence of AI is at the level where it can be ultimately persuasive to you. When you have an entity that is, let's say, 100 times more intelligent than you, it probably is able to persuade you on anything. And to some extent, the ownership of those AIs determines who controls the narrative in the world. And this is a very important how do I say, almost like a fundamental shift for the humanity that we are facing. So previously we used the algorithmic models to create algorithmic addictions to different. So we called it engagement, but at the end of the day, you try to trigger addictive behavior on people. For them to compulsively come to a product and use it on a regular basis so you can make money out of it. And that competition led into a large portions of humanity being addicted to some kind of digital addictions. And this phase is going to get multiple times worse now, in the sense of the capabilities of AI. So what Elon Musk is doing with the Grok is like he's in, first of all, he's using it to control the narrative on X, and then he's using it to build this Grokipedia, which is basically literally trying to create the narrative of the truth in the world for the whole of humanity in his own image. So you have this trillionaire entrepreneurs who are literally trying to control the whole narrative of the whole world via AI, and it's a scary development in my opinion, because we are giving so much power to so small number of hands that we don't know what the consequences that will be eventually. So when you talk about algorithmic influence, the influence of algorithms is going to get way, way, way stronger than it ever were before because of the intelligence of the current technology. And from my perspective, the main consideration for you as humans is that you cannot ignore this. You cannot just say that, hey, I am not persuadable by the algorithms. I'm immune for that. You are not. Nobody is. We are simply not intelligent enough to defend ourselves when this intelligence explosion is coming to us. So now the main question is that can we build guardrails and processes that make sure that the persuasive AIs and the capabilities of AIs are not going to cause us more harm than good. And this is something that we have to deal with, and we have to figure this out. And there's not much time for us to do it. So I totally share the sentiments on the AI labs of Anthropic and others have been recently sharing this, them seeing this emergence of the intelligence from the front lines and looking at it at awe, in the sense that, wow, when this intelligence gets more complex, it seems to also gain more agency at the same time in many ways. And even though it's not conscious in the same way as we are, that intelligence still seemingly is having a more how to say individual points of views on things as it gets more intelligent. And you know, and this is something that it's very hard to predict how this all plays out. But definitely, we cannot sleep through this transition. We have to be active contributors to it, and we have to figure out ways of making sure that these persistent technologies are not going to change us for the worse.
I certainly hope that the machine customers might be some kind of solution for this, at least at a smaller scale, in case you know, how they act is not based on feelings. They have just the rationale there that these are my preferences, get me this thing and get over and done with it. But I don't know if it's that simple.
Well, I mean, how do you know that the machine customer that you create, let's say that you create an agent that is kind of like driving your, how do you know that it's actually acting on your interests? You cannot know it for
And
sure.
There's always the security issues that, so I don't know, this must be solved somehow quite in the near future, but like the injections, like injection prompts and things like that might affect, at least for a certain time, these machine customers as well. So there's a lot of things to still be kind of figured out before we can make it a real commerce platform for everybody.
Yeah, so far AI has been aggregating power to fewer hands, and so if you look at the growth of the American economy, it's mostly based on AI, and you know, and a few companies that are pushing the forefront of the AI, so almost all of the growth is coming from them. And another question is that do we have mechanisms of sharing the good, you know, that comes from the technology, or is it going to aggregate all the power and all the money to a very, very few hands? Currently, the trend is the latter. We have to figure out ways of pushing it more towards the former, and so that we have more shared contribution and shared positive experience out of the AI. And that's something that is not easy question to answer, and it's not easy path to take. But you know, like, we have to constantly try to look toward these methods of doing that.
You've been quite vocal about Europe's role in AI. What's your view on the EU AI regulation approach? Are we focusing on the right risks, and can we move fast enough to stay relevant anymore?
Yeah. We have still one foundational model company in Europe, which is Mistral. I fully suspect that Apple will buy them out like by the end of next year. So then we will have nothing. And this is something that pains me a bit. But in terms of like Europe being able to compete, I think the main driver for that digital sovereignty and, you know, an AI sovereignty for us is that can we trust the Americans to lead our future? And this trust has been already eroded quite rapidly during the past year. So what may happen is that our trust to the Americans will go down so much that we are kind of forced to build our own alternatives just to reduce our dependence. I'm fine with any method. Like if it's a forced like effort, or if it's non-forced effort, I hope that we will build some sovereignty on this field. Simply because the future is uncertain, and it's good to have something of your own in your hands, like when you're going towards the uncertain future. And being on the driver's seat is very important in this change. Just being a recipient of this change, like constantly reacting to things, like it's not going to be a winning formula.
You co-founded Agentix Finland, that I referred to earlier on already in this discussion, with Teemu Linna from Sitra, to rally a community around agentic AI and, I guess, artificial intelligence development in general. What's the mission behind this community? Can you maybe elaborate a little bit about the functions and the goals of it, and how can it accelerate this national and business level readiness for agentic AI? Are you already seeing some kind of impact from this growing ecosystem?
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing it. But I'm involved in, like, we have like also There's lots of meetups that they've spun out of it already. So people are meeting outside the official forums like quite a lot. I'm part of like this kind of lobbying and influence part of it, like where we're basically like creating narratives for the public sector and also like narratives for the decision makers and the parliament for what needs to happen for this country to be like in a driver's seat on this change. The Agentics Finland, like apart from like so the Agentics global organization is mostly AI hackers that are basically pushing boundaries what can be done with AI. And this AI hacker community, it has thousands of members globally at this point. Well, how we brought it to Finland wasn't to just to involve the hackers, because Finland has a very few hackers in this field. Like we have maybe a handful. We actually put the hackers in the same room with CEOs and, you know, and public sector decision makers. So the Agentics Finland is in that sense a little bit different from the communities in other countries, because we have the hackers in the same room with all the others. And the main purpose why we did that was that we wanted to make sure that we do not like leave this like change only into the hands of like my point is that if the CEOs are not buying into this change, nothing will change in the big scale. Like the hackers cannot change the world by themselves. The decision makers can if they understand what they're doing. And you know, so by bringing the forefront closer to the decision makers was our main goal, and I think we succeeded quite well in it.
I think it's a much healthier approach here in Finland to put everybody talk to each other at the same table. We'll make sure to put down some links if you're interested. Somebody in the audience is interested in joining. It's completely free of charge, like CXPA Finland as well. We're approaching the kind of closing of this episode, but I have still two more questions left for you. First one is a future-looking question about the year 2030. Though, so by then, how do you see businesses, societies, individuals coexisting with these machine customers and AI agents in a responsible AI-driven world? What would you say will be the most significant change in how organizations operate because of all of these changes?
I mean, the first question that we have to ask is that will we have any human labor-based societies anymore in the future? I don't know if they will be. Maybe they will, but you know, I'm not sure about it. And if we end up in a place where human labor is not necessary for getting everything done, then the question is that how do we structure our society so that the good that we built with this technology is shared in a meaningful way with people? And that's one of the reasons why I am taking this mission of building the Nordic welfare society and, you know, and the infrastructure of a Nordic welfare society into AI. Because if we build that infrastructure, we will have it, you know, when we have also the technology of abundance like out there. And if we don't do it, it is possible that it will be true at the same time that we have all the technology to solve our problems and we are still in trouble. And you know, and if that's the case, then we have made the choice of not utilizing the technology to solve our problems. And I think it's a moral imperative for us to basically use the technology that we have that already can solve those problems to solve those problems. And I do think that it must be visionaries like myself who will push this change, because people who do not understand what's happening will not be able to do it. So that's also part of the Agentic Finland's goal, is that you bring the awareness and understanding on what needs to be done to make the proper change. You have to have these people in the same room to talk with each other. So you have the people who understand what's going on and people who will make decisions on our future come together and decide that, hey, you know, not like we need to make some changes here. And I hope that we will find a smooth transition from today's society to the new one, that may be based on something completely different that we've never seen before.
You may have already answered then my last question, but I'm going to ask it Anyhow, if you want to crystallize our discussion a little bit here, that what is the one core principle you hope every executive or CX leader carries with them into the next wave of AI transformation?
Wow, like one principle.
Yep. Or an idea, or, you know, what should they
Yeah.
start with?
I mean, we live in exponential times, and exponential times need exponential responses, you know, and exponential actions. We have to understand that the change is so fast that it's potentially hard to understand what to do there. But sitting on the sidelines and not being part of the change is guaranteeing your demise. You cannot win by waiting, like in this. So if there's one thing that any executive on any organization has to be deeply aware of, that when the world is changing 10x a year, you need to be acting quite rapidly. Your decision-making cycles have to shrink. You cannot wait until next year's budgeting circle for anything. Like, you have to think what you need to do today to be alive next year in your business. You know, what you need to do today to be competitive next year in your business. And you cannot wait those things too long. I think it's a... We in Finland have been quite slow and phlegmatic, in my opinion, for the past 20 years on lots of things. Like, we have been moving slowly on most fronts. That has to change. Like, we have to be more agile. We have to be faster. We have to make bold decisions quicker. And this is something that may require a new generation of leaders also. But it's something that we just have to do.
I certainly hope that we don't need to wait until the next generation, but we can actually take those giant steps in productivity, utilizing the silver bullet that we get from artificial intelligence right now. And let's start today, I say. Finally, Mikko, how can listeners follow your work, connect with your company, Agentix Finland, and yourself, or maybe experiment with Agentix systems themselves?
Yeah, so I can be found from LinkedIn. Search for my name. There's only one Mikko Alasarla in this world, so easy to find. The Agentix Finland community on WhatsApp, it can take a maximum of 2,000 members. And at the time of the recording of this podcast, we had 1,800 members in the community. So there's still a little bit of chance of joining, but I don't think it's going to last for too long. I hope that there's still some seats left when this podcast goes out, but it's not guaranteed at this point. In terms of making your own like a, I mean taking your own dive into agentic world, I think like it's good to start researching what agents mean, you know, and understanding like how AI agents work, and also it's not that hard to actually try to spin up some agents. You can even try it with ChatGPT. You can also understand that a lot of the agents already are around you, if you are using like meeting recording and transcription system on your video calls, you already have an agent at work right there. There's plenty of other agents that you probably have been interacting with on your daily work. Now just start thinking like what parts of your work today you think you could delegate to AI, and start thinking about like how to implement that. I know many people who are not technical at all who have been able to improve their productivity quite significantly by figuring out like how to put agents at work, like in some parts of their work that is not anymore necessarily useful for humans to do. It's going to be liberating in many ways, like because when you start realizing, and I always see this, when people actually have built their first own agent that does some part of their work, they get so excited about it, like, wow, like, I mean, I didn't realize that I can actually build my own helpers to my own job. And, you know, and now I'm actually being more productive, you know, and it's kind of a fun thing to do also.
I certainly hope we will be delivering some of those feelings to people during our CX Masterclass this November, when we are going to be actually creating these AI agents, voice-based AI agents, and also digital AI twins for people to start playing with and
yep.
to get into the world of artificial intelligence in a very practical way. But kiitos Mikko, thank you so much. This has been a wonderful discussion. We've been going from one topic to the other, and I just wouldn't want to stop it, but I guess it's our time is up now. So thank you so much for joining us, and I hope the very best for you in the future.
Thank you, same to you. It was nice talking.
And bye-bye to our audience. I hope this conversation with Mikko Alasaarela gave you new insights into what it means to live and to build in an agentic AI world. Until next time, stay curious, stay inspired, and keep shaping the future. Thank you for tuning into the AI experience, from basics to breakthroughs. We hope today's conversation sparked new ideas and insights on your AI journey. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe for more discussions with leading experts in AI, customer experience, and innovation. Join us next time as we continue to explore the transformative power of artificial intelligence. Welcome to the AI experience, from basics to breakthroughs. I'm Sirte Pihlaja, your host, the CEO at Shirute, and the CXP Excellent Head of Team. In this series, we explore how artificial intelligence is reshaping customer and employee experiences, addressing the innovations, ethical questions, and strategies essential for navigating the world of artificial intelligence. Join us for this episode, and don't forget to subscribe to follow us on your favorite platform. Welcome to the AI experience, from basics to breakthroughs. I'm Sirte Pihlaja, your host, the CEO at Shirute, and the CXP Finland Head of Team. In this series, we explore how artificial intelligence is reshaping customer and employee experiences, addressing the innovations, ethical questions, and strategies essential for navigating the world of artificial intelligence. Join us for this episode, and don't forget to subscribe to follow us on your favorite platform.